I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are author Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, Kevin Williamson, who's the deputy managing editor of the National Review, and Mario Loyola. He's a columnist. He's also a director at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. That's a conservative think tank. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas. Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, what's going on?
All right, let's get some coffee. Come on now.
That was Friday.
Lovely shop today.
Friday.
I know, right? I mean, I guess everybody's kind of down because, well, Wiener's out. And,
well,
you know, the latest.
Everybody.
Well, right, exactly. But, you know, the whole Wienergate scandal has kind of come to a head. Not the now resigned congressman trying to put an end to all the craziness since he mistakenly tweeted a lewd photo of himself 3 weeks ago. Oh, I hate when that happens. Now, he said he was stepping down due to all the distractions, but there were a lot of distractions going on during his four-minute speech, Michelle. Jeez Louise, that was so ill-advised. So, why didn't he just, like, tweet his resignation?
I don't know. I'm always fascinated by that, but I don't know. In case people don't know what we're talking about, I'll just play a short clip, and this clip is almost as long as the press conference. Here right. It is.
Mm-hmm. I had hoped to be able to continue the work that the citizens of my district elected me to do, to fight for the middle class and those struggling to make it. Unfortunately, the distraction that I have created has made that impossible. So today I am announcing my resignation from Congress.
Yeah! Bye-bye, pervert!
Wiener roasted at his own press conference. Thank you for that, Michelle. Holy mackerel. Well, all right. So I guess my question is simple. Do we think Anthony Wiener stepped down due to the distractions, or maybe because he's a little untrustworthy? A-Train, let's hear from you first.
Well, I think it was a little bit of all of the above. I mean, I, for one, I'm glad, you know, Wienerpalooza is finally over. It's, you know, it really did distract from a lot of the issues that Congress and our government were trying to deal with. And, you know, I think it didn't help that, you know, his Democratic leadership also threw him under the bus, you know, during this whole process. But, you know, I think that it was right for him to resign.
Yeah, I thought that was really fascinating. That the Democrats, his whole party line, you know, lined up the wagons and said, bro, it's time to go. K-Dub, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think that the main problem for Wiener isn't so much that he was behaving in a lewd fashion, but, you know, New York needs a congressman who knows how to use Twitter properly.
If you can't
handle the basic technology, I'm not sure that you can represent the city. You know, it's like watching a car crash. It's like being in a car crash, actually. You know, when he saw that first picture go up and knew that he'd hit the wrong button, you know, at that time, you either tell the truth, fess up to it, and you probably live through it, or you do what he did, which is invent some fantastical story, which is going to get found out. And then you end up having to resign. You know, he made the wrong decision right there afterward. Not just morally wrong decision, but also the tactically wrong decision. He probably would have survived this if he just told the truth, fessed up, said, yeah, I hit the wrong button, and wife's mad at me. And
yeah,
I totally agree with that.
Because
it's not one – you really do – Jimmy, really?
I mean, Charlie Randall
totally
down the street.
I totally agree with that. Yeah,
dude,
yeah.
David Vitter is cold chilling right now.
Yeah. I mean, hold on. This is the same country where, you know, crack may kill, but it might get you elected. So it's like, guess what? You know, I mean, if you just come out and just tell the truth, you know, people are forgiving, and his constituents were obviously on his side. But you know what? I think wifey came home. And let me just tell you, because I know this, because it's my life, wifey changes everything. You might want to talk that big and bad stuff, but when wifey gets home, well, that's it. You know, it could very easily be a different story. And that's what happened, I think. You know what? I really admired him. Like last week, I told you, I really admired the fact that he was just like, you know what? All of y'all can kick rocks. I'm staying. But then wifey came home and then changed that tune real quick.
I don't know. Mario, what do you think?
Super Mario, well, give it.
Tell me what you guys think. If all this scandal had involved his home computer and his personal accounts, I think that it might have been a little different. I worked in the Senate. I worked for Senator Hutchison in the Senate. And I can't believe that anybody would use a government computer for this. I mean, first of all, it's a violation of the public trust if it's not unethical. And second of all, it's so stupid. I mean, you know that the NSA is monitoring your computer. The government computer is public. Everything on it is public. I mean, what was he thinking? I mean, I can't think of any 22-year-old staffer that would do this.
I just don't.
Well, you know what, Michelle?
The thing that sticks with me, though, is what Dave Zirin said last week. I think the pictures, I don't think you get around the pictures. I mean, Dave Vitter, there have never been any pictures of him doing whatever it is he was doing, okay? Yeah.
But he also didn't have the DC Madam in his office.
He didn't have them exactly in his office. Also, for me, I tell you what Dave Zirin of The Nation said last week on this program, which is these young women, for the most part, emailed him to say great speech. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so he emails back, you want to see my package or whatever it is. This is the part that, so this is what happens. Here you are. I mean, I've been an intern, I've been a young woman in Washington, and I think, you know, you should be able to engage public officials on matters of substance without having them email you back, you know, about their equipment. And I think for me, that's the piece I don't think you can get behind. The lying, who wouldn't lie about that initially?
Right.
I think it's just so disrespectful. And I think, to your point, I know that Republicans and conservatives often say that there's a double standard. They feel like Republicans are kind of jammed up on these, or conservatives, more to the point, on these social issues because they say, oh, well, you guys are the ones always beating the morality stick. But progressives have to answer for this, too. If your attitude is, you know, human rights and equality and we're all equal and all this thing, how is it that a young woman can – if a young man emailed you to say nice speech, is that what they get?
So, Michelle, this is my problem.
That's what they get from Eric Massa.
I'm not saying that any of this is right. I mean, Wiener was totally wrong. But some of those women were kind of given quasi-flirtatious – Wiener's way. I'm not saying it's right, but it's not fair to say. You know, I'm not saying Wiener's right. I'm just saying that maybe he was seen. You know, he was seen as some kind of opportunity, which he shouldn't have. But to say that they were all tweeting him, you know, nice speech. Not all of them were.
Jimmy, you really don't think you can talk your way around this?
I'm not defending Wiener. I'm just pointing this out for the record. I'm just pointing this out for the record. That's all.
All right. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to our weekly barbershop segment. We're with author Jimmy Israel, who just is going to spend the next few minutes digging himself out of the hole he just climbed into.
Fine.
Civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, editor Kevin Williamson, and conservative columnist Mario Loyola. Excuse me, guys. I'm going to have that coffee that Jimmy recommended. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thank you. Yeah, drink up. All right. Moving on to the other side of the aisle. Republican candidates took part in the CNN debate earlier this week. Now, all I can say is that I'm glad to know that Newt Gingrich likes American Idol more than Dancing with the Stars. Good to know. But what do you guys think? K-Dub, my man.
Well,
what do you think?
I don't think the nominee was there, is what I think. I don't think any of those guys is going to be the next president of the United States of America. It seems unlikely. You know, a few of them improved their stature a bit as you know, it's a fairly low bar to clear. I mean, Michelle Bachmann just had to come out and not seem insane. Mitt Romney had to come out and seem like a good approximation of a human being. And everyone, you know, cheers and claps and all that. Our elections are really long, and I'm going to get really tired of hearing about this and talking about this before we get through it. But I don't think any of those folks are going to be president, especially not Newt. Newt's
okay. Next. Note to self, bring snacks for Kevin. Next time,
right.
Just try to keep him interested. we got to keep you in the loop, man. It's a long road. So
yeah, but I agree with him on that point. I mean, it's too early on for me to take any of it seriously. You know, I watched that thing. It's like an ugly dog pageant, and like the only question is, you know, which one of these dogs is the ugliest? As far as I'm concerned, you know,
Arsalan's got something to say about this. He does think you have to take this seriously at this stage, Arsalan. And why is that?
Well, you know, in the debate that took place in New Hampshire, you know, you had people like Herman Cain and Newt Gingrich, you know, instead of talking about, you know, the actual issues that are affecting all of us as Americans, you know, talk about the creeping threat of Islam, you know, hide your kids, hide your wives, the Muslims are coming. You know, Herman Cain has gone on record over the last few weeks and said that he would not feel comfortable appointing a Muslim to his cabinet unless they took some sort of loyalty oath. Apparently he failed Civics 101 in fourth grade because Article 6, Clause 3 of the Constitution says that no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. And then had Newt Gingrich, you know, talking about how, you know, Sharia or Islamic law is, you know, threatening to creep inside America and circumvent the Constitution. He apparently also failed Civics 101 because in the same Article 6, Clause 2 is called the Supremacy Clause, which says that the Constitution shall be the supreme law of the land and nothing can circumvent that. And so what we're starting to see here at least with Gingrich and Kaine, you know, is pandering to the lowest common denominator of politics. Even Matthew Dowd, former chief strategist for George W. Bush's 2004 campaign, said that, you know, Newt was taking it too far. And if he actually believes this stuff, it would be crazy. But again, you know, when you don't really have any policy, you know, substantive policy initiatives, and your entire staff resigns last week en masse, you know, you're going to resort to these political red
herrings. Doesn't that suggest then that these aren't serious people, so maybe it isn't that significant?
This is true, but this would be true if, you know, in the 2008 presidential campaign, you know, we had severe whisper campaigns of Barack Obama being some sort of crypto-Muslim Manchurian candidate. Again, the whole otherization of, you know, Barack Obama. You know, this, it sadly to me seems as though it's going to be, you know, we have 13 states right now that have anti-Sharia referendums, which will all get struck down in the courts, but they know that it's a political winner for, you know, especially Tea Party conservatives. And so, again, using these political red herrings are, in my opinion, is going to be one of the ways that they're going to try to steal this election.
That's tough. Mario, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a difficult question. I mean, I've spent a lot of time traveling in the Middle East, and I've spent a lot of time around Muslims. I think that they're wonderfully gentle and affectionate people, but, you know, there's a Nazi-like frame of mind in terms of a really virulent hatred of the Jews and of the view of all democratic governance as corrupt, conspiracy theories.
Wait, are you saying this about all Muslims?
Hold on. I'm just saying that these sentiments, you can't be denied, are very prevalent in the Middle East, at least. I mean, you know, in Gaza, it's horrifying, the cartoons that they make for their children. I mean, it's horrifying that Jews are portrayed as animals to young children.
What about the Arab Spring, where you have nonviolent pro-democracy protests by youngsters happening all around the Arab and Muslim world right now? I mean,
nonviolent except for the attacks on Coptic Christian churches.
And if you actually read the stories about that, it actually had nothing to do with the fact that there were Coptics. It was apparently a Coptic woman had converted to Islam, and then Copts in Egypt had taken her back, and so it was not sectarian. Even a Coptic Egyptian is slated on the presidential ballot for Egypt. So again, you know, you're using these small microcosms, you know, equating Nazism again, really? I mean, this is the kind of rhetoric that Newt Gingrich uses. This is absolutely absurd to equate Nazism and Islam in one fell swoop.
I didn't equate Nazism and Islam. I'm just saying that mindset is prevalent. Yeah, that mindset is prevalent in the Middle East. It can't be denied. I mean, that Palestinian political culture, what qualifies as a moderate among Palestinian politicians, would be considered an extremely racist person for an American politician.
So what's your point about what role that should play in our...
Well, I mean, it's we have a problem, and we have a problem as Americans even talking about it because we don't want to say things that come off as racist.
Well, what about... Mario, again, not all... There's 7 million Muslims living in the United States today. None of us... I'm not an Arab. I'm not Palestinian. I'm not from Gaza. We have African-American Muslims. We have white Muslims. We have Hispanic Muslims. This sort of reductive, analogies is absolutely absurd. It's the moral equivalent of saying that, you know, just because we have urban crime in America that we should somehow castigate all African Americans, or there's an immigration problem, we should castigate. I mean, that's the whole, you know, anti-Hispanic, anti-Latino sentiment that we've seen in the immigration debate.
Look, I'm not making any such argument, and I'm not castigating anyone. I started off by saying that, you know, I think that Muslims, by and large, the ones that I've met in the Middle East in particular, are very affectionate and gentle people. I love being around them. I was very happy to be around them. I look forward to being around them again. But these attitudes, I mean, racism in Arab culture, as I saw it in the Middle East, is much more acceptable than it is in America, and it's a problem.
Do you think, Mario, I got to ask you, if you were to substitute some other group for the language you were just using, you think you'd find it acceptable? For somebody else to say, well, I've been around a lot of Latinos. They're lovely, gentle people. Do you feel you'd think that was okay?
I'm from Latin America, which is a part of the world where people love insulting each other and don't ever care about stuff like that.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not touchy, so I think cultural generalities are perfectly acceptable.
Okay, I hear you. I'm hearing. Kevin, what do you want to say about this?
Well, in terms of the loyalty oath stuff, if you're looking for stealth jihadists, that's probably not the best strategy for finding them, you know, because, hey, are you happen to be a terrorist sympathizer? Do you happen to be, you know, some kind of wacko extremist? I don't think they're probably going to tell you the truth in that situation. I mean, that's the whole point about being a fifth columnist type. So I think that kind of talk is silly, and it does play to it gives you an excuse to talk about things that are easier to talk about than the real problems of dealing with terrorism, dealing with our confrontation with various elements in the Middle East, and the long-term implications of those things. I mean, you know, people sort of go on about Sharia, and I understand the concern. I understand the emotional impact it has, but I mean, we are not going to become a Sharia state. I mean, it's just it's not in the cards.
Jimmy,
it's not going to happen in Oklahoma. It's not going to happen in Texas. It's not going to happen in New York. It's not going to happen in New Jersey. And but we do have, you know, other real problems we have to deal with. Some of those emanating from the Middle East. Some of those having to do with Islamic attitudes toward the West and Western attitudes toward Islam. And it's a lot more complicated, and it's a lot harder to deal with than saying, well, you know, I'm not sure I'd like to have any Muslims in my cabinet.
No, Jimmy, take a final thought on this. What did you think about the debate? What struck you? We only have a minute left.
I think nothing good can come from comparing anybody to Nazis. That's what I think. Nothing good can come from that. And everything you say after that, no one's listening. Just FYI.
Yeah, I hear you. We have another like 30 seconds left, but Jimmy, you wanted to mention that Herman Cain said in a recent Bloomberg interview that he does not identify as African-American, and he says that he feels a stronger affinity for the term black. And I'm just curious what you think about that as a person who's thought a lot about this.
Yeah, I agree.
You're black too.
Okay. That's right.
All right. There you go. All right. To be continued. Just one clarification. Mario mentioned that Wiener used government-issued computer and BlackBerry to tweet and send these photos. That's not confirmed, by the way. I just wanted to mention that he says he uses personal BlackBerry and all that, but I don't know that that makes it any better. But just a FYI on that. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist and author of the book The Denzel Principle. He joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Kevin Williamson is the deputy managing editor of the National Review and author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to Socialism. He was with us from our bureau in New York. Mario Loyola is a director with the Texas Public Policy Foundation. That's a conservative think tank that assesses how federal policies affect Texas and the rest of the country. He's also a former speechwriter at the Pentagon. And Arsalan Iftikhar, he was with us from Austin, Texas. And Arsalan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney, founder of themuslimguy.com, and the author of a forthcoming book. He was with us in Washington, D.C. Thanks, guys.
Peace.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday. We'll be right back.